Coming up on today's program, from confirmations to conservation and a little conversation in between. Wrap your head around that. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. That story on conservation coming up later in the program on today from the Ohio Newsroom. Up first, the number of Americans who call themselves Christian declined for several years, then leveled off at about 63%. That's according to Pew Research Center data published last year. Now, young adults pursuing higher education are starting to devote themselves to the church. This year, multiple universities across the state have reported a rise in Catholic confirmations among students. WISO's Shea Frank spoke with students and faith leaders to learn more about what's driving the trend.
It's a chilly April morning as I walk through the towering wooden doors at the University of Dayton Chapel. The chapel's pews are overflowing, filled with both repeat parishioners and new visitors who are here to witness five students receive their confirmation.
Today they will receive the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and they will be called to be witnesses to the resurrection.
That's Father Robert Jones, chaplain at the University of Dayton. This is just the latest confirmation service. The Catholic school has seen 26 people confirmed this year, up from 6 last year. And other Ohio colleges are reporting similar numbers. At the University of Cincinnati, confirmations through their Order of Christian Initiation of Adults, or OCIA, have jumped from 5 participants in May of 2024 to 25 last year. Miami University saw a jump from 20 to 40 this year, including non-students in the area. And at OSU, their confirmation numbers have risen from just 10 people in 2022 to over 70 this year alone. Sarah Boddy is a director of OCIA there.
People are drawn by the sacraments, by intellect, by a frustration with the way our culture says relationship should work, either with the relationship with self, the relationship with others, the relationship with authority.
The Catholic Church lost a lot of followers in the earlier part of this century, amidst clergy abuse scandals and a widening divide between the church's teachings and some parishioners' social and political views. Now, Father Jones says increasing isolation and polarization in today's society may be behind this surge of confirmations.
You know, the rise of technology, just current events. I think as students are kind of wrestling with some of these bigger questions, they're realizing there might be something more that they want to explore.
Joseph Ellis Vella is a 22-year-old criminal justice major at the University of Dayton. He was raised Catholic. While his siblings got confirmed at the typical time in their early teens, he wanted to wait till he felt personally ready for that step. Ellis Vella said his decision was driven by his late grandmother.
I remember just stepping in there, kind of taking the idea that she is with me during this process and looking down on me and keeping that with me kind of like helped me push through every time I was like, I don't know if this is for me or I'm not sure, but I just knew that she always wanted this for me.
Father Jones says family is just one reason students are seeking confirmation. Others include a desire for answers, closeness to God, or a search for connection as they grow up in what he calls a fragmented world.
Being part of a faith community is a way that we can get out of that partisanship. And I think even our faith communities help us understand there's a different way of living.
Plus, Father Jones says having the first American pope doesn't hurt.
Pope Leo, when he talks, if he talks in English, we can all totally understand what the pope is saying.
For WISO News, I'm Shea Frank.
You can find more of Shea's reporting on our website at wiso.org. Well, in this season finale of Translucent, Lee Wade talks with a fellow radio host in Minneapolis who's working to make sure more stories of transgender success and resilience are heard.
Ellie Krug spent years building a successful legal career in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, trying more than 100 civil cases in the courtroom. Then, at 52, she made a decision that would change everything. She transitioned from male to female. In doing so, she became the first lawyer in Iowa to openly transition while still actively trying jury cases. These days, she's based in the Twin Cities, where she stepped into a role as a radio and podcast host, bringing her story and perspective to the mic on her show, the illegal trans woman.
You know, I fell into the radio business back in late 2016, early 2017, when I had been interviewed on our local progressive radio station. And at the end of the interview, I asked, do you think they might be interested in a transgender radio host? And they're like, yeah.
It's not on an everyday basis where you hear trans people coming across your airways or trans people to have the opportunity to have that kind of platform. Could you tell us a little bit about the illegal trans woman?
Sure. The illegal trans woman takes its name from Project 2025. That 900-page document, a main focus is diminishing, if not erasing, transgender people from public life. And so I'm like, I have to now be a full-throated advocate for my community, for trans, non-binary folks, gender variant people. One of the missions of my show is to help remind people that it's not a choice. You know, I mean, we just got born this way, just like, you know, I'm left-handed. So
yeah,
I didn't want to be left-handed, but I am. And God love my station because they're like, yeah, we want you to go. We go in this direction. And Lee, I've got to just tell you, last month my show got syndicated, but I want to compliment you. I mean, you're in Ohio. You're in a red state. You are doing God's work for our community. You really are. And so I'm thrilled that Translucent exists, and I hope that it gains more traction as well.
That really means a lot, Ellie. Thank you. And congratulations on the show being syndicated. You know, we talked a lot about representation and the purpose of having shows like Translucent and like The Illegal Trans Woman, but yeah, what stories about trans people are still missing from the conversation?
I think stories around trans people being successful, around them facing adversity, around them being able to fall in love, being able to form families, being able to walk their kids to school, around them being able to create businesses, around them being faith leaders and being respected within their communities. I think all of those kinds of stories are missing. First, trans people are afraid and they don't want the notoriety, okay? They're missing because, according to the Williams Institute out of UCLA, California, 30% of us live in poverty because we lose our jobs, we lose places to live. You know, look what they did in Iowa, taking away the protections out of the state civil rights statute. But the reality is those success stories need to be showcased far more than what we're hearing, because that gives our community hope that if they're persistent, that if they believe in themselves, that they too can have a success story. And I just want to again say thank you to having me on the show. Thanks to WYSO for having your program. I think it's so incredibly important, particularly where you are in Ohio. You and me, what we do is we're there and they can, I think, better understand our humanity.
Thanks, Ellie. It means a lot to be doing this work alongside you. You can find The Illegal Trans Woman wherever you get your podcast. And while you're there, go ahead and catch up on all of the episodes of Translucent. I'm Lee Wade. Thanks for being here this season. And I'll be back soon. Until then, stay trans and stay lucent.
Translucent is supported by the Ruby Girls Foundation and Square One Salon and Spa, and produced at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. And speaking of WYSO, sharing some studio space with me today is WYSO's Operations Director, Peter Hayes. Peter, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's nice to be here.
So we've got some things to talk about, but I want to talk about first, you are into music. You are a musician, correct?
I have worked as a musician a good deal of my life, yes.
In fact, you were in a group called Magnolia Bolthead, which is the Another Beautiful Day in Paradise is the theme music for this program. It's a beautiful tune.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I wrote that for my wife.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I've met your lovely wife several times. How's Mary Sue?
Mary Sue Campbell is doing awesome.
How's she spending her days?
Well, not in the pool hall. She's keeping herself busy. She still does some Macintosh support work, and she also does a lot of stuff on eBay. We go to estate sales, and she finds vintage costume jewelry from the 30s through the 50s and sells that on eBay.
Oh, wow.
And does okay.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And what did she think of that little tune you wrote for her?
Oh, she loved it.
Yeah.
Bless her heart. Yeah, I wrote several tunes for her several years ago. Well, many, many years ago, probably 35 years ago, we bought a Yamaha P22 piano, which eventually will be living here. It's a studio upright, and I wrote several songs right away for her on that piano. And
let's talk about some other music experience that you have. What do you play?
Mainly piano.
Okay.
Mainly piano and keyboards. I also play guitar and flute, but mainly keyboards.
You also repair musical instruments, correct?
That is correct. For the last 25 years or so, I've had a business that restores vintage electric pianos, the Fender Rhodes and the Hohner clavinets, and have done so for clients worldwide.
Yeah. Can you name drop one or two?
Stevie Wonder, yeah. Dave Chappelle, lots of rich and not so rich musicians all over the place.
Yeah. What'd you do for Stevie?
I restored four different Hohner clavinets. Three of them were the D6s that he used on stage, and one was a Hohner clavinet C, which is an earlier model that a friend had bought for him and wanted me to restore. My good friend Joe Tritchler was able to show me exactly which components to swap out and how to deal with that particular instrument. Anything more complicated, Joe or his dad, Tony, would do the complex electronic work on it.
Okay. So. Any musician always asks, what was their musical inspiration? Did you come from a musical family?
No.
No? Cut and dry.
What got me really, I started taking piano lessons when I was five, and then I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show and said, well, you know, I need to do that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That kicked off a whole generation of musicians.
It did. I think I've heard a lot of people mention that. But yeah, the Beatles were quite inspirational.
Doing anything with music today?
Not today.
You're a busy man.
I am a busy man. I am actually, I have one more Fender Rhodes electric piano to restore. This one belongs to me. I've pretty much retired that business. As a matter of fact, today is the day we gave up our vendor's license, so Electronic Edge is no longer going to be doing that. So I'm getting close to retirement, and I don't want to carry 150-pound pianos in and out of my shop anymore.
Yeah.
I've had a great time doing it, but it's time for me to be a gentleman of leisure.
Oh, nice. I mentioned that you're a very busy man. One of the reasons you've been so busy lately is with this WISO move to the new building. A lot of that fell onto your shoulders.
A lot of it. And that's okay. That's what I do. And I like my work here, and I like the people I work with. And but there's been a lot. Emptying out the old Kettering building, moving stuff from there to here, getting everything working, and a lot of grunt work, like buying janitorial supplies and finding people to do certain things and haul stuff away. And yeah.
Still emptying out the Kettering building.
We are indeed, yes. Hopefully that's almost done.
What do you think about the new digs here?
Love it. Love it. There's, of course, with any new situation, there's new things to learn and there's new bugs to work out, but it's awesome.
You live here in Yellow Springs?
Yeah.
Born and raised where?
Born in Middletown, raised in Germantown.
Okay. How do you like Yellow Springs?
I've been here right around 40 years, and I like it a lot. We have a really beautiful place that we live, and there's cows across the street. There's cows on the other side of our house, so we're surrounded by cows on two sides. And so we're kind of out in the country, and it's beautiful.
Just you and your wife there?
Yes. Kids are grown.
Are they spread near and far?
Allison's out on the side of a mountain in Northern California raising goats, llamas, chickens,
oh my God,
and who knows what else. Growing all sorts of stuff. Zoe lives here. She lives in Springfield, and she works at Electro Shield here in Yellow Springs.
Well, great. What else should we know about Peter Hayes?
I'm incredibly handsome and humble. No, there's not a whole lot more to know about me.
You mentioned that you're aiming for some leisure time down the road. What
yeah.
do you plan to do with that leisure time?
Read all the books that I had never read when I was a kid. Instead of reading the classic, I was reading Mad Magazine and Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
I also plan on practicing piano and setting up. I've already started to set up a studio to where I can start recording multi-track from my various instruments. And so I'll keep myself busy.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome way to spend your time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But I'm going to be here at YSO at least a couple, two, three more years.
Yeah. Operations Director for WYSO, Peter Hayes, thanks for speaking with us and letting us get to know a little bit more about you.
My pleasure, Jerry. Thank you.
You're listening to YSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Up next, we've got more conversation coming your way, this time between WYSO music director and host of Kaleidoscope, Juliet Frumpholz, and the Gage Thomas Band, who paid a visit recently to the studios to talk about a new single and how their music has grown.
The Gage Thomas Band live here on Kaleidoscope on YSO and Novaphonic. Welcome back, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be back.
I feel like since last time I heard you guys play in the studio, you've gotten perhaps a bit funkier.
Yeah.
I'd say so. I'm feeling that in your sound.
Yeah.
We went electric.
We did. Yeah. Last time we were acoustic.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
The approach has been, we're really focusing on original music. And what's great is you bring a concept into... I mean, these guys are incredible musicians, and you bring a concept in front of them, and we're in no rush to what I would call finish a song. We add it to the set list, we start playing it, and it just evolves. It'll get rock and roll, it'll get funky, it'll get bluesy, and then it'll finally find its place. And when we start playing it the same way over and over, we're like, I think that's
it. Pretty close.
Yeah.
It's all grown up now.
Yeah.
I think we can
time to
that
put it out in the world.
Fly, little bird.
Yeah.
That's got to feel so good and be such a good place to be in as a band, to have that trust to be able to say, "Okay, let's let this song kind of find itself rather than us deliberately dictating what this has to be."
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing off limits. That's for sure. We go down every avenue.
I think even in the live setting, I mean, even when we're playing shows, that's part of our show is, we have the songs, but we're not really sure how we're going to play it that night.
Depends on how we feel.
Yeah,
for sure.
Including tonight with the song we just played.
Yeah. It was a little different than last time.
I play hard for you. I mean, I think that's part of what I enjoy most about this band is just. We go where the energy is, and that's how we find new things.
That's got to make the live shows a lot more fun and a lot more adaptable to, like, where you're playing. Because when I look at, like, where you're playing coming up, all different places across our community, different types of venues. In addition to how you guys are feeling, are you kind of like picking up the vibe with like, okay, this is what kind of crowd it is tonight, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, we for sure do. Like, if we get into like a bar or something and you can kind of tell it's like it's going to be a little bit lower down in the night. So we'll start off not quite as fast, but then, we got some of the bigger shows coming up where I think the energy is going to be a lot higher. So we're going to come out swinging a little harder.
And of course, the people always make a difference.
The people always,
Once we get some people moving and grooving, it's like it's time to open it up just a little bit, let's take a little bit more of a chance.
Yep, yep,
that's a good one. That's a good one.
Thank you. Also, a song.
Yes, it is.
Well, you have a new single out already. Are you planning to release more music this year, or just kind of focus in on the live show?
I think it's on the table. We got some that are pretty close that I think we would like to get out.
What has the recording process been like as of late? I mean, I know you've got this resource there behind the drums who can help with some of that.
Yeah.
And Seth.
Yeah.
Seth, you could probably explain it better. I mean, we Keep Moving was an incredible experience.
It was.
I'll kick it over to you, Seth. You can explain it from a studio perspective.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be very technical.
Do it.
We were just getting really together for a rehearsal to finalize, like, let's get the final version, final form of the song, because we've jammed it, we go off on tangents, and we just need to solidify it. So in that process, I decided, hey, let's do it at the studio just to get a feel for how we're going to set it up anyway. Let's throw some mics up and see what happens. And so we've recorded it just to listen back to and reference. And as, like, you know, a week or two went on, we're just thinking, like, man, this actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Everybody's like, I don't know. That sounds good.
Selfishly, I knew I'm not going to do a better drum. It's not like it's super complicated, but it just, with my flaws as a drummer, I was like, this is what you got.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's all live. We just added some overdubs of background vocals.
Yeah.
And some shakers.
And some shakers. Some of the shakers and bongos, yeah.
And then that was it. And so it was the first time something like that set up landed so huge for me personally. And it's like, man, I'm never, ever going to do a rehearsal without those live mics ever again.
Yeah.
Folks will have lots of chances to experience some live moments in time with you all coming up this summer. Any particular gigs you want to make sure we highlight to our audience?
Yeah, I think, well, we're playing at the Oregon Express coming up here in a couple of weeks, May 16th, with Sam King and the Suspects. So we're really looking forward to that one. But I think a big one this year for us is the one following that, May 29th, at the Lock 9 Pavilion in Piqua. We're opening up for McGuffey Lang. So that's
congrats.
A big one we're looking forward to. We're in the Troy Strawberry Festival on Sunday, I think, June 7th. Trail Town. Yes, we're playing at Trail Town a handful of times this year.
August.
It's like one of our favorite places to play, yeah.
Grateful Dead thing in August there, I
think. Yeah, August 9th, they're doing like a tribute to Jerry Garcia. So it's going to be us, Pine House, and I think GSMO. So
nice.
That'll be a super cool show.
Very cool. Right down within walking distance from where we are now.
Yeah.
One of our favorite places to play.
Yeah. The vibe's always great there.
Oh, yeah. Well, if folks want to keep tabs on what you're doing, upcoming releases, where you're going to be, all that good stuff, where should they connect?
Facebook is probably to find our schedule and most of the information. I would say Facebook. But we have Instagram. We post all of our live shows to YouTube. So I think my wife might have created a TikTok for us. So we're probably out there somewhere on that too. And then, of course, Spotify, Pandora. We can be found on all those as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's one thing that that you said, but just to kind of put a spotlight on that, we do record the audio on all of our live shows and post that on YouTube, so you can catch the full shows on our YouTube channel.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
very cool. Y'all, thank you so much for being here. That was so much fun.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks again. Check out the latest from the Gage Thomas Band. That new single, Keep Movin', is out now.
You can find more studio sessions on our website. Just check out the music tab at WYSO.org. Up next, let's get to that conservation.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom, using artificial intelligence to fight invasives.
Support for the Ohio Newsroom comes from Cerity Partners. Cerity Partners' Cleveland-based wealth management practice helps bring clarity to complexity, because money doesn't come with instructions. Information available at CerityPartners.com/NPR.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom takes you around the state, connecting you with news and neighbors from all over Ohio. I'm Kendall Crawford. Now that the weather is warming, flowers are blooming, and bugs are taking flight, in many parts of the state, the spotted lanternfly is among them. With no natural predators, the colorful pests wreak havoc on fruit trees and crops, so much so that in many areas of the country, residents are ordered to squash the bug on site. One 15-year-old in Butler County has another idea on how to limit their spread. Melody Lynn developed a project as a part of her local chapter of 4-H that uses AI to assess spotted lanternfly risk for different areas of Ohio. It won second place in the National 4-H AI and Agriculture Challenge. Welcome, Melody.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for talking with us. So first, could you just tell us about what made you want to do this project? Did you see these bugs in your neighborhood?
Yeah, so basically it was just one afternoon when I was on the couch and I was watching TV, and suddenly like a whole news report came up saying that there was like a spread of spotted lanternflies. I saw this like invasive spread as an opportunity where I could like use this like conflict affecting my neighboring like farmer communities, especially like since I live on a farm, one of my neighbors, their trees had like black sooty mold on it. And so I wanted to come up with something that would kind of stop the invasive species from attacking all their orchards so they wouldn't be able to like sell their products to market.
Okay, so tell us, how does the tool work?
Basically, I used the Ohio Department of Agriculture risk map, which shows like which areas in Ohio are under quarantine. I also used a list of nearby apple orchards where the spotted lanternflies could feed on. And then I also used the National Oceanic Association, which lists the current weather in Ohio, which basically also shows you where the lanternflies would most likely be. And so I collected all of this data. I put it into Claude AI, which helped me come up with like a model that kind of combines everything and makes it convenient for farmers to like see what areas are being impacted and what they could do to stop the problem.
That's really cool that you're able to get the data from all these different areas and then make it into this map. What do you think it means to the agricultural community to have this kind of tool?
Well, since my model isn't an actual app yet and I'm still developing it, I feel like it's just like a sense of hope that things could be changing in the farming community and that things could be get better as like we progress over time.
So you say you're thinking about making an app. Are you hoping that like community members or state officials could use this map to make decisions?
Yeah, I'm hoping like over time during the summer, especially when I can like have more time to develop it and like add more to it. Since from the presidential AI challenge that I took part in, I got a bunch of critiques that maybe I could use to kind of develop my app over the summer. And hopefully I can go big and like spread my app all over Ohio and then maybe like wider and worldwide over time.
Absolutely. The spotted lanternflies will have no chance against you.
Yeah.
That's Melody Lynn, who placed second in the National 4-H AI and Agriculture Challenge. Thank you so much, Melody.
Thank you.
Support thoughtful journalism of stories like these while connecting with engaged and loyal listeners statewide by becoming a sponsor of Today from the Ohio Newsroom. Contact Dan at ohionewsroom.org to learn more.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
This is Bird Note. Does staying cooped up inside with your kids drive you up the wall? Take comfort in the bird that does it year after year, the hornbill. Each breeding season, a female hornbill imprisons herself in a tree cavity and takes on the task of raising her young. In the days leading up to her nest arrest, the female starts blocking the entrance to her nest with a plaster of mud, bark, and poop. Once the entrance becomes so small that she can barely squeeze through it, the female slips inside and fills the gap, except for a thin slot for ventilation and food. She stays in there for months, incubating her eggs and raising the chicks. While she's busy at that, the male brings fresh fruits and a variety of animal protein. At last, when the nest becomes just too cramped, the female escapes the nest and frees herself. The young either follow her out or reseal the entrance and remain in the nest until they're ready to fledge. Most of the 61 hornbill species in the world exhibit these strange behaviors. Locking down provides nesting hornbills some protection from predators and wards off other hornbill pairs looking for a place to nest. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks so much for spending your weekends with WISO. This show is available as a podcast. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead and our very own Peter Hayes. Join us again next weekend. We've got more highlights and conversations for you then. Thank you.